Well, welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to have some open lines for you now for the next couple hours. Paranormal would be ideal, but anything goes. Anything goes. I do want you to say a little prayer, though, for the victims and obviously the family members of those fallen police officers and the wounded ones as well over that tragedy. Gosh, when does it ever end, huh? Okay, well, let's change gears a little bit, at least for a night. Let's drift away into the unusual and the paranormal and try to get our minds off a tragedy that will stay in our gut for the rest of our lives, I think. So we'll be back in a moment with your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast and Open Lines. Got to tell you this story. As I leave St. Louis, heading for Denver tomorrow to do our Beyond Belief TV shows and then back to Los Angeles for about a month, last night in St. Louis, but I've got a friend of mine, really close friend, good guy. He's worked with me on some projects before. He loves clothes. I mean, he just loves clothes. I can go 2 years with a suit. Maybe even longer. This guy has got a closet full of suits. So he went out and he bought two suits from a well-known men's place and paid $332 for the two suits, which is not a bad deal at all. At all. But he has them tailored by them as well. And, of course, they charge a little bit for tailoring. And he wants this done, this does not, this done. Now, keep in mind, the two suits cost $332. The tailoring cost him $550. Can you believe that? Unbelievable. Anyways, let's go to the phones. Joe in the Bronx, start us off, Joseph.
Hey George, how are you? I had a question for you. I was going to ask Joshua P. Warren about ghosts, maybe a George Washington ghost sighting in New York City. But I wanted to ask you, have you ever seen a ghost?
I have not seen a ghost directly. I have had glimpses of things that go by quickly and stuff like that. I've seen shadow things. I used to see some shadow rodents scurrying across the road, but have not seen a ghost. How about you?
Yes, I have. I've seen two. One, my younger brother, who passed away at the age of 27, and also my father. These are pretty quick sightings, but encouraging in a way. You know, I mean, that life continues. You asked about the afterlife earlier when you were talking to Joshua, and so it's encouraging because I think that, you know, in a sense, they are kind of with us and watching over us.
I think so too, and I'm more convinced every day that the afterlife is the real deal. I used to have my doubts. How about you?
No, I definitely believe in the afterlife, you know.
I mean, did you ever doubt it?
No, I haven't. Maybe it's my Catholic upbringing, you know, looking forward to the hereafter once we pass from this life, but yeah.
Yeah, I went into that little moment, there was a little phase in my life where I just didn't know, and I gotta tell you, it's a lonely feeling. I did not like it at all. And I snapped out of it pretty quickly, where I'm a staunch believer in it now. But there was that little moment that I thought, this is it. It's over. You die. Doesn't mean you shouldn't enjoy yourself. Believe me, have a great run. But I do believe it carries on. Next up, let us go to Mike in Ohio. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, good morning, George. How you doing?
Good. You too.
A couple questions for you.
Sure.
Have you ever heard of a project where they moved airplane hangars in Wright Pat, like in the 60s, called Project Black Chest?
I have not. Now, I've heard that they've done a lot of things at Wright Pat, but I haven't heard of that specific name.
I wondered because, see, years ago, this was out of the team. There was a guy who's former military, showed me pictures that he was in an outfit that moved airplane hangars at Wright Pat. I didn't think about it until I seen some tools that he gave me a while back with his name still engraved on them, you know, some construction tools. And I was like, oh, yeah. And he said, when I was a teen years ago, we were construction, he said, well, if you got something in the hangar and you can't move it, he goes, you just move the hangar.
I wonder what they had in the hangar, right?
And he told me that, and he showed me a picture. You know, he said it was daylight. You know, it was like one of the largest airplane hangars he was proud of. He said they ever moved. But he said a lot of his stuff was done at night.
In the cloak of darkness.
I never thought about it until just recently.
Well, and that's where they apparently brought the wreckage from Roswell.
Yeah, you know, you're having that get-together down in Asheville, and Joshua Warren was on tonight. And then he said the island that he's investigating for the observatory has like a ley line or a meridian that comes over to where the old Mayan ruins were.
Yep.
Now, that made me think that now over at the Sphinx, they say that there could be like the Library of Alexandria in the paw of the Sphinx.
Or the Hall of Records.
Right, or Hall of Records, or that's what I meant.
Yeah.
And then there could be another Hall of Records over in Mexico near the Mayan culture.
In Central America, and also one in Bimini. Edgar Cayce said that they were in three locations.
Now, what if that ley line or that tangent that Joshua Warren is talking about crosses right over the path of the Hall of Records in
of each one.
America.
Yeah, that's very possible.
What if, has he ever thought about that, to go along that line and look at that and see what the topographical looks like?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think he has, but it's worth asking him in Asheville.
Hey, I just thought I'd throw that out there.
All right, Michael,
and
thanks.
George, you do an awesome show.
You're very welcome. We take your text messages and questions. Tom has got one back in the L.A. studio with his little flip phone.
Not that
but
long.
It works.
So this one, we're going to hear from Jerry in Port Huron, Michigan. Do you think if someone has a rough life here on Earth, it means they did something bad in a previous life?
Let's explain rough life.
Well,
like,
you know,
poverty and stuff like that.
Well, it doesn't say in a text. There's only
so
much.
All right, so I would say not necessarily. If it seems like this life is a life of punishment for them, maybe that's possible. But I think if somebody's on hard times in this world, I don't think he's being punished for something he or she did in another life. It's, you know, maybe they were very rich in another life, and so they're going to get their try at being very poor in this life.
So if you're a person that believes in reincarnation, and you live your life here on Earth the best you possibly can, do you think it guarantees that whatever you reincarnate into, you'll have a good life?
I think your reincarnation should be steps of perfection, that you get better as you evolve. I don't think you generally take a step backward.
But not a punishment.
I don't know. No, it's not a punishment. I mean, where you are right now, Tom, in your life, the next one, I think you'll be even more elevated than you are now.
That's interesting. That's interesting
my take. That's my take. You're not going to go backward. You know, you're just going to keep progressing until you get to that level of perfection.
Well, one thing's for sure. I guess we'll find out.
All right. And Skype is open, folks, at George97313. 97313. I just did an interview with Duncan Trussell, the comedian, via Skype earlier this week. And, he's out of Los Angeles. He's going to air that shortly, if it hasn't run already. Amazing technology. I've got to tell you, I've got to do a show with Lauren Weinstein about live video streaming and everything from phones. I mean, just remarkable. You know, when I started in broadcasting back in 1969, three networks, TV stations had high multiple values, radio stations, that was it. That was it. If you wanted news, you had to go and turn on Walter Cronkite or listen to breaking news on the radio. Now it's everywhere. It's Twitter. It's on Facebook. It's just, and now they're streaming live things. I mean, how much more can they do and how fast can it get? Some of you check in with me on that kind of technology. What do you think of that? Is it too much? Kelly in San Clemente, California. Hi, Kelly. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I had a couple things I wanted to, one thing I wanted to ask you and then a story about Roswell. A while ago, my grandmother told me that her cousin was in the military and she was involved with Roswell and cleaning it up. And she was very close-lipped about it. She was sworn to secrecy, but the only thing that she said is that she retrieved a piece of aluminum similar to what Josh has found, but it was flat. And when she scrunched it in her hand, it would crumple up. And then instantly when she let it go, it would lay flat again.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's the only thing that she would talk about, because I think she was, you know, obviously afraid to.
It was almost like what a gum wrapper now does. You know, if you take that little aluminum out from a gum wrapper, it generally folds back into the position it was in. You know, or some kind of tin foil that just opens up. But we didn't have tin foil in those days.
Oh, interesting. I didn't even realize that. So have you heard about this before?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, it was really interesting. I thought you guys might enjoy that. And then I had a question for Josh. I used to live in Sonoma County, and there was a night when I was driving through the pasture land in Northern California, and I saw these lights. So I pulled off, and I'm looking in the pasture, and they actually were orbs, and there was probably hundreds of them. I mean, the whole pasture was lit up with these little bouncing orbs, and they were floating and lit from within, and I couldn't make out any particular shape, but I just wanted to see if either of you had any insight into what that might be.
Orbs are very strange, Kelly. I mean, I don't know what they are. I really don't. Some people say that they are spirits of the dead, and they float around. Some people say they're little tiny UFOs, and they float around. I don't know what they are. Some people say they're natural, like plasma balls. And then, you know, of course, other people say that they're light reflections when you take pictures. But they're strange because they look like they're under some kind of control as they float and hover all over the place. I'm beginning to think, if I had to guess, I think they might be souls, spirits. And it's the energy that kind of illuminates them. Let us go to Josh in Omaha, Nebraska. First time caller. Hello, Josh.
Hi, George.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I wanted to talk to you about a vision I had when I was about 12 or 13 years old.
Sure.
And it's actually an end times vision. And I also, just to establish some credibility here, I wasn't a very religious person through my late teenage years and early 20s. And I had no visions or anything like that during that time. As of recently, my uncle had twisted his leg. And I had predicted it 3 or 4 days prior. Wasn't able to put my finger exactly on what it was, but something had told me in my heart. And so I had let him know. And then shortly after that, the doctors, it was swelling really bad, and they couldn't figure out what was going on. So I had another thing come on my heart, and they told me that it was infected. And sure enough, a week later, they found out that it was a horrible infection in there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and so that hopefully that should establish some of my credibility with the listeners. I don't think I'm a prophet. I don't think that I'm a psychic or anything like that. I think I've been blessed a couple of times. Anyway, when I was 13 years old, 12 or 13 years old, I was very sick in the basement. I had a pretty high fever at my mother's house. My mother's room was just above mine. There was no insulation, so she could hear me very well. My brother's room was less than 10 feet away from me on the other side of the basement, and so he could hear me very well. The walls were thin. And I felt like I woke up, and I was screaming their names, and nobody was able to hear me. And so I got out of the bed, and as I got out of the bed, I walked outside, and the sky was blood red like it was on fire. It looked like, I don't know, a bomb or something, or an asteroid or something had hit. There was tanks rolling down the street. People were melting, and it was really crazy. It's been on my heart to call you guys for a long time. And I guess with the way the world is going now, I finally picked up the phone, and I just wanted to, I guess, warn the audience and maybe see what you thought of those.
Well, I hope you're wrong, Josh. I hope you're wrong.
Me too.
But here's a question. I mean, why is a 12 or 13-year-old having end-time prophetic thoughts?
You know what, George? I don't know. I did read the book of Revelations quite a bit, and the Bible. I was very versed in the Bible as a child, and then I kind of had lost my way shortly after that vision.
Yeah.
But what stopped the vision, which was very interesting, was I called up Jesus' name because I was so scared. And immediately I was back in my bed, and I was screaming for my mom, and she could hear me again, and my brother got up, and everything went away, and it was really crazy. So I don't know. I just feel like God put it on my heart, like I was ready for it. And, you know, now I'm trying to tell people.
Have you had other prophetic thoughts along the way from 13 on?
Honestly, George, I've always had something in my gut that has always kept me out of trouble or kept me out of bad situations. I don't know exactly what it is. Maybe it's just intuition or what.
Right.
But, you know, it's just been something that, you know, maybe says go left instead of going right, and I avoid some kind of trouble or accident or something.
Interesting take. Okay, thanks. You know what? Let's hope you're wrong, but events are just out of control right now. Raymond in Mangum, Oklahoma. Hey, Raymond, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
I'm good, Ray. Thank you.
Radio show. There was, you know, something I wanted to talk about and mention, because Josh was spot on with a lot of things.
Yeah, he is.
It hit a nerve with me because my wife, the last 5 years of her life before she passed away in 2012, she was pretty sick with being brittle diabetic. And she had heart failure, kidney failure, all that, you know, the whole gauntlet. But anyways, I got pretty complacent with her passing, you know, in and out of the hospitals constantly. And the day she died, you know, I thought, okay, the doctor's going to have me, you know, sit in the waiting room, fill out paperwork again. And I just went to get a soda in town and came back, and they called me in and told me she had passed away. Well, of course, I lost it.
Of course.
And they had picked me up off the floor and took me into the ambulance because we just live in a small town. And I'm sitting in the ambulance with one of the drivers, you know, and he was trying to console me and everything. And next thing you know, out of just nowhere, and I'm deaf in my right ear, right in my left ear, I hear my wife's voice. She says, "It's okay." I love you. And that night, you know, I was inconsolable that night, you know, and I finally fell asleep, and I had a dream of her in heaven. And she was smiling with just tears running down her face, saying, "I can breathe, I can see, I can walk, I can run."
God.
And she was just overjoyed with happiness that it just softened my heart. And I'm like, okay, she's okay. I can go on now.
That allowed you to go on, didn't it?
It allowed me to go on because I know she's again.
That's the way to do it. Raymond, thank you. That's a wonderful story, and that's a real story for you, believe me. Back with more of your open line calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Sure is. We've got a great night for you of open line calls on Coast to Coast AM, so stick with us all night long, and I'll be telling you what's in store for next week. We've got some great things. Okay, here we go. Back with open lines. We've got another hour to go next hour as well. Joe in Dennis, Massachusetts. East of the Rockies, of course. Hi, Joe.
Hey there, George. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, sir. How long have you lived in Massachusetts?
Pretty much all my life. I grew up in Brockton, Massachusetts.
My mom grew up in Fitchburg.
Oh.
Born and raised there.
Oh, okay. Well, I originally my question was for Joshua. Are you a fan of horror movies?
Yes.
Oh.
When I can.
Well, one of my favorites is The Conjuring.
That's a classic.
Yeah, well, that's based on Joshua's investigations. And I wanted to ask him how realistic it is.
Ooh, that would have been a great question.
You know, it was about demonic possession, you know?
Sure was.
Did you like that movie?
Yeah, it was okay. It wasn't my favorite.
It got really intense towards the end.
I still like The Shining.
Oh, that's great. That is great. But you know what's better than That version of The Shining is a TV movie version of The Shining in 1997.
Was it a made-for-TV movie?
Yeah. It was a three-part made-for-TV movie.
Was it? I wonder who started that. Do you remember?
It was Steven Weber. He used to be on the show Wings.
Yeah. I don't watch that much. The only TV I really watch these days are the cable news outlets.
Well, the only thing was this TV version of The Shining was so great because it was exactly like the book, like the Stephen King book. And the original Stanley Kubrick movie, you know, he did a lot of things different.
Did you see It? From the Stephen King book?
Oh, yeah, I've seen them all.
I hated clowns before that, but I definitely hated clowns after that.
That is great, yeah. And again, the book of It was much better than the movie.
Yeah, they always are. They always are.
Yeah, much more detail, yeah.
By the way, speaking of books, let me do a little shameful promotion here. July 26th, my very first novel comes out, and I really... I'm really excited about it. It's called Night Talk, two different words. It's on Amazon. I hope we sell the living daylights out of them. But it was very fun to put together. And it's about a talk show host doing something. I'm not going to tell you everything about that book. But it's up there right now. They're taking pre-orders. And Tom got the covers today sent to the offices in Los Angeles and just went wild with them. He was excited. But they're just covers because the books come later to us, and he's looking for the books, and he can't find them. All he's got is all these covers. Let's go to Barbara in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I just want to tell you, when you had your guest Nicholas Scow on a few weeks ago, he was talking about the CIA, and my mom was a playwright, and she wrote a play in the 50s about activities in South America with a female photojournalist. And the CIA contacted her and said, well, asked her, whatever that term ask means, not to produce the play because it was too close to what they were doing down there.
Really? How did she get the information to even write the play, Barb?
I don't know. I didn't find out about all this till after she passed away from my dad. I just don't know. My mom was kind of she was really in her element with political.
Oh, really? Okay. Stuff. And did the play ever get to the stage?
No.
They squashed it.
Yeah, they squashed it. And my mom was a political activist in a lot of ways, and our phones were bugged in the 70s, and we could never find the bug.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't appreciate all this stuff until much later.
Well, when you say she was a political activist, what were some of the issues that she championed for?
Well, she, with a few other people, kept oil drilling out of the Santa Monica Bay.
All right.
And
not easy to do in those days.
No, and like when your guests say they can't bring new inventions into town, like without the oil companies being ticked off, that was true back then too, because they'd sneak them in the middle of the night.
Did a little bit of your mother rub off on you in terms of that kind of effort?
Well, I think it did in a way. I mean, I didn't get directly from her, but it was kind of in the air, and I'm kind of more mild-mannered. I do it through the radio.
Okay, that's good. You can always get to us. Tom, you got another text message for us. What do we have?
I do, but I'm curious. When you were a little kid and you went to the circus, what did you do when the clown came?
I covered my eyes.
Seriously?
Yeah, I don't like clowns. The only clown I had fun with when I was a kid was Emmett Kelly. I had an Emmett Kelly puppet. And I like that. Just Google Emmett Kelly. You'll see what he looks like. You know, images on Google, and you'll see a picture of him.
This is like pre-1963, right?
Yeah.
62. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But I had that. But then eventually, I just didn't like clowns. To me, they're kind of creepy. You know, Wayne Gacy, the serial killer.
Yeah.
Dressed up as a clown. You know, they're just creepy. And then the movie It came out, and like I said, I didn't like clowns before that movie came out, and I definitely didn't like them after.
But they also represent happy, and it's just interesting to me that you would see the evil side.
To me, they're hiding behind something. That's the way I always perceived it. You know, and they're making those little sausage balloons and stuff. And
I digress. It's just weird. This is from...
Now I'll never get to sleep.
This is from Rachel in California. Hey, George, can a private citizen sue a politician like, say, Hillary Clinton for endangering their lives with sloppy handling of emails?
I guess you can sue for anything. Whether it'll hold up in court or not, that's another thing.
Yeah, I don't even think they'd give it any weight.
No, it would probably get kicked out. Okay, let's go to Seth in Denver. Hey, Seth, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, George.
Sure.
Yeah, I always listen, but sometimes call when we're talking about weird subjects or things are getting crazy. And I just wondered, with all the years that you've had on the show, do you ever think about, are things really crazier right now than they were 15 years ago when I first started listening?
Let me tell you, I think the perception is that things are crazier now. But I have a feeling throughout our entire life, things have been weird and strange. I mean, I have gone through the assassination of a president in 1963. I was 13 years old. I have witnessed the Vietnam War. I have witnessed the Afghan War, the Iraq War. I have witnessed Bobby Kennedy's, and when I say witness, I was there. Not there, I mean in the time period. So I witnessed Bobby Kennedy's assassination, Martin Luther King's, and it just goes on and on. 9/11, of course. I think that this planet has had weird things going on and strange things going on since the beginning of time. I think the perception is that things are worse now because of social media. This incredible tool that we have with these little smartphones, these tiny little computers in our hands that truly make life easy and wonderful. I mean, I can, for example, wake up in the morning. I don't sleep that much. But with my handheld smartphone, I can send Dan back in Los Angeles a list of the bumper songs I want for the show that night, and get it out of the way, get it finished, and just hit a little button, and it sends it in the form of an email or a text message. That's incredible technology. It makes life easy. If I spent the time, and you'll understand this, answering text messages, if they were phone calls throughout the day, I'd never get anything done, ever. Text message, you look at it, send a reply, maybe not even a reply, you just look at it and move on. Somebody else does it, sends you another one. Somebody else sends another one. If they were phone calls, I'd go batty. So technology has some very wonderful applications to it and aspects that are phenomenal. Yet on the other hand, it has contributed, I think, to this immediacy in the world and has created people getting uptight a little bit. And I don't know what we're going to do about that. I think we've gone too far to ban the internet. But, I mean, you have people doing despicable things, and they're broadcasting them live now. You know what? Like some Hollywood movie. It just makes no sense. Donna in Vancouver, British Columbia. Hi, Donna. Welcome.
Hi, George. Thanks a lot.
Sure thing.
Okay, I have a story about a friend of mine that I had for about two and a half years. His name was Hal.
Hal.
A good buddy of mine, yeah, and he passed away just this last February of this year. And we were really good friends. We'd go for coffee, talk on the phone, go for walks over in the beautiful Stanley Park over here. And we'd joke and laugh, just good buddies, you know. And when he passed away, I was, of course, upset and terribly sad, and I went to his service, and it was very hard to keep it together. So another friend of mine and I went to his service and then came back home, and every 5 minutes I would think of him for days and days and days, until one evening I was missing him a lot and thinking about him. And I called out to him, and I actually did not just in my mind, but with my voice, I said, "Hal, where are you? Where are you out there? Are you okay? Can you hear me? Can you call me? I really miss you." And I was close to tears and really miss this guy. He was such a good friend. And I said repeatedly, "Please, please, please call me. You don't have to talk. Just call." Well, the phone rang about an hour later, and I'm so surprised because it was like 10 to 12 at night. And I grabbed it quick, and I said, "Hello." Nobody was there. It was a dial tone. And on my little, what do you call it?
Caller ID.
On the phone.
Yeah.
There was no name, no nothing, and just a dial tone. So I set it down, and I think my mouth must have dropped wide open. And I started to get really kind of happy and silly. And I said, "Oh, you heard me. You heard me." So it was him. It had to be him, because in the next few days, all my friends I talked to said they had not called me.
Huh.
No one does that late at night.
He got your message.
He did. He sure did. I was so happy. And I still talk to him and hope that maybe he can send me another little something now and again.
And it makes you feel better, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. He was so nice. He used to say to me, "You always smell nice." And he would say to me one day, "Your lips are really sparkly."
Oh, I think he liked you.
I think he did. I had gotten that.
I love
he
it.
He was so nice. He was a lot of fun.
Thank you,
anyway,
Donna.
That's my story.
By the way, we have a new system in place where we sense smells and things, and you do smell well. Thank you, Donna.
There you go. Thanks,
all right.
George.
All right, take care. Yes, we've got this high technology. Let's go to the Netherlands, all right? This is where I'm talking about technology. Marcus is with us out there. Hey, what's our observation of the day, Marcus? What's going on?
Hey, George. Good morning.
You too. Have you been following the tragedy here in the United States with the Dallas police officers?
It was very horrible. The first I knew about it was because I listened to the rerun of your show.
Yeah, okay.
So I was shocked a little because this sounds very serious. It seems like it's a sort of a setup. So,
horrible. Some people think it might have been. Might have been. I mean, this individual who went crazy was a former veteran military man from Afghanistan, U.S., of course, and had no real prior problems at all. It was strange, but people that knew him said that when he came back from Afghanistan, they noticed some kind of change. But this episode of the police shooting sent him over the edge.
Jeez. Well, the reason I'm calling, because it's about the supernatural.
Uh-huh.
And I sent you guys an email. I don't know if you got it, but...
When did you send it?
Yesterday.
Okay, well, I haven't opened them all up yet because of the tragedy. I haven't caught up on the emails.
But it's exactly about this because you're supposed to have a guest about angels and stuff.
Yeah, we're going to reschedule her.
Yeah, and so I sent you guys an email because I have sort-like experiences with that. And,
with angels?
Yeah, well, a few encounters.
Give me one story, Marcus. Share that with us.
Well, you see, the few encounters I had were important, but the most important thing is that usually I don't have an encounter, but it seemed like I sometimes pick up memories of them. Just a few looks or vision or...
Yeah, glances.
Yeah, glances, yeah. And I think they want to try to teach me that, or God wants to, that we should not, as human beings, we should not fight each other.
Oh, I'm all for that.
They are trying to tell us that this is a battle.
In a perfect world, that would be great.
Well, it's a battle between good and evil, and I see them doing their best to, throughout the past, present, and future, do their best to let us see this is a spiritual war, and so we are in between as human beings, and they are trying to help us get to the point where we are ready for God. And so they help us, they guide us, but the reason that things are getting more worse is because we don't seem to get that evil has a boss, you know?
Oh, evil is out of control, Marcus, on this planet.
Yeah, and people just don't seem to get that if you see bad things happening, those are the effects of the good and bad battle.
Can we beat evil, Marcus, in your opinion?
We can, yeah. If we stick together, and if we don't turn on each other, and we have Jesus in our lives, I've seen things happening, George. Just one little thing. I once was in my own apartment, and it turned out that below me in my apartment building, there were people doing voodoo.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Stay away from them, Marcus. You don't want to be around any voodoo practitioners. Though, I will say, some people who practice voodoo are very nice people. There's a difference with that kind of religion. Voodoo is a religion. Some of it is not demonic at all. So you have to really understand who's doing it. We're going to come back with another hour of Open Lines.